Good evening. Welcome to the Solari Report. Today is May 2nd, 2013. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. We had a great lunch with subscribers in Portland. Several celebrities showed up. Paul Levy, the author of Dispelling Wetiko. In fact, I did a great evening with some of his circles at his house on Friday night. And then Joel Garbon, the head of the New Energy Movement. A lot of exciting conversations while I was in Portland about what's coming up with the Breakthrough Energy Conference in Colorado in October, hopefully. And then Nora Gagaudis, who's the wonderful nutritionist and neurofeedback practitioner and author who's been on the Solari Report. Upcoming events, I'm going to be on May 25th live with George Norrie in Vancouver. I'm sure George will probably broadcast that. And then June 1st, we're having lunch with subscribers in Marin County. And then June 22nd, if somebody comes to Warsaw, in Warsaw, Poland. Tonight, Getting to Success with Kimberly and Foster Gamble, the creators and producers, directors of Thrive, the documentary. We pre-recorded it yesterday morning, as Kimberly and Foster were going to be unavailable this evening. So we'll run the interview, and then I'm going to take interview-related questions after the interview, or if I can't respond to them, I'm going to email them to Kimberly and Foster and make sure we post the answers on the blog. Our theme tonight is Getting to Success. If you look at the invasiveness and the lies of the pro-centralization team, it's really the time to push back. And, of course, spring is always the time of new beginnings. I love spring. It's so energizing. As I was driving across the country, everywhere I got, to Nebraska, to Boulder, to Idaho, to Portland, everyone was saying, oh, thank God spring is here. We're so ready for spring. And nothing helps you push back like an alternative vision and the actions that to take us there, because the future is something we need to be attracted into, and we need a future that's more attractive than the one being presented by the pro-centralization team. And that's why I was so eager for you to hear about the Solutions Hub and getting to and how Kimberly and Foster used it in the Brown Law Spring campaign, because we're really, to get to successful results, we need to start thinking in terms of creating at a much greater scale and a much more sort of open source way than we have been doing. And I think the Solution Hub offers you a great tool that anybody can use anywhere. In Money and Markets, the theme was the big question. And here's the big question. I put the charts up on the blog. If you look at how the U.S. equity markets and commodities were trading until about 9 months ago, sometime in 2012, what we would see is the central banks inject more, more juice into the system, and then all the risk-based assets, both commodities and equities, would trade up, and they really were trading in tandem. And then, very unexpectedly, we got an unprecedented split with commodities diverging and dropping, and U.S. equities staying stronger. And if anything, the commodities drop should signal that that the economy is weakening, so you wouldn't expect equities to go up like that. One of the things we talked about in the equity overview last month is the divergence between copper and U.S. equities. That's an example, although many corporations can benefit from a drop in commodities prices. Example, Starbucks keeps doing well as the price of coffee drops and drops and drops. But we've seen this divergence, and it's become, much greater than expected. And the question is, which is next? Are we going to see them start to commodities reverse and start to merge back in, whether equities dropping or commodities going up? U.S. equities are seriously overdue for a correction. At the same time, there's a possibility they can break through to what I've started to call the new unnormal. We have the head of PIMCO referring to markets now as the new normal. To me, if we break through, it's going to be the new unnormal. When Chuck and I talked in the equity overview last month, the big question is, can a significant amount of capital shift out of the fixed income markets into equities? I refer to this as the planetary debt for equity swap. There's an argument to say that this could happen. We certainly, I think, would be much better off as a society financing with equity rather than debt. One small symptom that things may be pushing that way is up on the blog today the central banks are reporting that they are buying a significant amount of equities. This is getting pretty scary. So now we've gone from, you know, surreptitious intervention in the equity markets to large-scale covert buying. If the S&P breaks through 605 to 610 and stays there, then we may indeed be in the new unnormal. And given that we're coming into summer, the old adage is sell in May and go away. That would argue for a correction. But either way, we're coming into a tipping point, whether it's commodities and equities coming back together or we shift into a new paradigm. But we're just going to have to wait and see what happens. Emerging markets relative to U.S. equity markets have been in the doghouse, and they're beginning to show signs of life. Now, their performance is much more commodities-driven. So it'll be interesting to see which way they go. After getting slammed down $140 in one day into the high 1300s on April 15th, that's the same day as individual taxes were due and the Boston bombing occurred, gold has settled down into the 1400s, closing at 1470 today. Enormous reports of tremendous problems with a physical market clearing at these prices. We've seen the premium on 90% silver go from 2 to 3% up to 22% last week, and then reports from dealers that they can't clear at any premium. They just can't get the silver or the gold. Now, if you look back to the tech bubble, we saw the S&P 500 ratio to gold as high as 5.5 at the top of the tech bubble. And then when gold hit its high in September 2011, it hit 0.6. Now it's reversed back and has passed through 1.0 with the S&P approaching 1600, which is almost 130 from where gold closed today. So big mystery, are we in the new normal? We're just going to have to wait and see. But what is happening is, and this is the argument for the new normal, is that the financial coup d'etat is over. It has been successful with the people who engineered it between the bailouts and the wars getting enormous amounts of capital. An example that the winners are having a bit of a party with a campaign over. We see the president announced today that Penny Pritzker is announced as the Commerce Secretary. Dennis Bernstein on KPFA Radio has done a very amazing job of documenting her involvement with the predatory lending process, so we have somebody clearly tagged as somebody engineering the housing bubble and having profited on it mightily, being made Commerce Secretary. Again, the good news last week and the last 2 weeks is the gun control laws got stopped and CISPA got stopped in the Senate after passing the House right after the Boston bombing. But as we can see, the trench warfare pushing back on both gun control and CISPA is very scary. I wanted to comment, we've got a lot of questions about what happened in Boston, and I wanted to comment on it, although briefly. Boston was very concerning for me because we're talking about an area between the Harvard University, MIT, Boston University, an area which is, for many years, has been sacrosanct against these types of covert operations. A lot of the most talented people who are being educated to step into leadership positions in the New World Order come through the Boston universities. So Boston has always had a little bit of a bubble, and of course Boston is a major equity investment manager. So to go into Boston with an op like this and prototype martial law in the middle of Boston is pretty chilling. It says no place is sacrosanct. We had two young men chosen to be the patsies. It turns out they have a very strong mother and family. Who've done an unbelievably effective job, given the absence of training, in persuading people that the official story is complete yaya. I posted a video up on the blog of some of the family members saying, you know, this is absurd, this is impossible. We now hear reports yesterday that more conspirators have been rounded up, and I take that as sort of the next step in trying to prove the family wrong. I don't think they expected the family to be as intelligent as they are. But it looks like we're going to need more fiction to hold to the fiction. I'm not going to spend any time trying to figure out what really happened. What you certainly learn, and I certainly learned in situations like this, is you can spend a lifetime trying to figure out what the real deal was. And if you simply watch the patterns of how the you know, the incident is used more often than not, you can make a pretty good guess of who might have been behind it. But the lesson learned for all of us is that we need to understand these events are going to keep happening. They work very well for the pro-centralization team. CNN reported this week that 55% of those polled are willing to give up some of their civil liberties to protect themselves against terrorism. I'm not sure I believe these kinds of polls. You know, you can engineer these things one way or another, but it is always depressing to see the extent to which the official story is embraced. I had a great subscriber call me today and said she had a dream that I told her that there were going to be two more terrorist attacks of this kind this year. And I said, oh, I think there are going to be more than two. If you look at the timing of Colorado and then Newtown, then Boston, I think we're seeing a move into a more accelerated speed. One of our wonderful Salary Report teams pointed out that these things don't seem to be happening in the South. And we commiserated that it's probably because there are too many people carrying guns in the South. And it would not surprise me if that's the case, although I'm sure they can move into any place. Fitting right into that theme, we see a story in the Washington Post today about a gun accident happening with children in the South, part of the official campaign to get background checks to apply to inter-family transfers. It's the first time I've ever seen the Washington Post care about poor people in the South. But it's an example of a real big push that's coming. In the Shame on You category, one of the magazines I'll occasionally take a look at and has very interesting articles is Popular Mechanics, that also has some of the worst disinformation in the world. They're famous for a hit piece on 9/11 that was really, you know, definitely goes in the hall of shame on disinformation. But they had a piece on Voyager space probes. The Voyager space probes I find absolutely fascinating. After 35 years, they are now approaching the edge of the solar system, which is, to me, very exciting. The Voyager 2 flew past Saturn in 1981, took a whole bunch of pictures, and that became the basis of Norm Berkland's book, The Rings of Saturn, which is arguably one of the most important books I've ever read. I put several interviews, video interviews of Norm Berkland up on the website, including one by Project Camelot, which is very much worth watching. The reason I've always thought that that date was important, and if you look at what Berkland says about the rings of Saturn, he says what they saw in the pictures were spaceships that were 70,000 miles long, made of plasma. So basically imagine a spaceship that's made of living organic material that were docking and they believed were getting energy from the rings. So you have these huge spaceships sort of juicing up and the rings of Saturn. And these are what are shown in the pictures taken by Voyager 2. So Popular Mechanics says describes technical difficulties that happened to Voyager 2 when it just happened to be passing Saturn, the implication being nobody could get any pictures. It's probably sort of a kickback on Norm Berkland's disclosures. I believe Berkland, and one of the reasons I believe Berkland is for some inexplicable reason, the mortgage fraud and financial fraud for the black budget just started to go wild right after that point. And, you know, if Berkland's telling the truth, that could be one of the reasons why. Our hero this week is Vernon Hershberger. Hershberger is the former member of an Amish community. He's a farmer in Wisconsin. He's in a battle with Wisconsin state regulators on raw milk, and he's basically taking the position that people should have the right to get together and trade and buy food from each other. He's absolutely right. Wisconsin is a wonderful farm state, and it's very chilling. I had one farmer up there tell me that they couldn't talk to strangers who came in and solicited them about milk because the state regulators pay people very large fees to try and entrap farmers. It's pretty scary. Anyway, but the right to buy and sell food is a very important freedom. One of the people we've seen involved helping with that lawsuit is the farm-to-consumer legal defense fund that I'm a member of, and we supported at Christmas time 2 years ago with a large donation. And in fact, I'm going to be attending as a benefactor They're having an event at Joel Salatin's farm in September. You can check that out on our event page. But I can't think of a more important right than our ability to grow and sell and share food with each other. Ask Catherine. We've got a lot of good questions. One question about Thrive. Posted on the blog, we had a comment about all the different things that has gone wrong since the subscriber watched Thrive, including now the Consumer Protection Agency saying that it was interested in IRA. They really haven't said anything more than that, but of course we all get spooked when that happens. And then talking about having to leave Hawaii because of Fukushima radiation, the move to control the internet, the free trade treaties, then the Monsanto Protection Act that we talked about 2 weeks ago, and then finally having their accounts pushed back from Switzerland, and now the gold price smashing down. It kind of feels some days like everywhere you turn, the tapeworm's there to sort of cut you off or steal your assets. And I think that's an important post because there is no doubt that we are being hit from all sides. And to me, it's why it's so, so important to come clean, to do everything you can to remove the connections between you and the tapeworm or anybody supporting them. And that's one of the reasons we call this the year of coming clean. I feel like our entire society is going through a detox process where it's not just the leadership doing these things. We're all complicit through the red button problem. I've told that story many times. If you don't know it, you can just go to the blog and do a search for red button. And I have it in several of my articles. But we're all complicit in this. And I think we're going through a big bit of a detox process, and it's going to feel worse before it feels better. Again, I don't think the pro-centralization team is going to win. But, you know, maybe they do, maybe they don't. But I'm going to keep proceeding along the lines that they're not going to. The more each one of us can do to come clean, the more we protect ourselves, but we do it in a way that helps protect everybody else. Another question. I've heard that the bullion banks or some other entities made millions and maybe billions of dollars on the precious metals price drop April 2nd. Doesn't it cost money to sell metals at a loss in a declining market? I just don't get how this manipulation is net positive financially for those doing it. I would think that there would be a loss, and that loss could be acceptable due to the political or perpetual goal that was achieved in the action. Also, how does this forceful plunge in the spot price represent a transfer of wealth to the controllers if the people holding physical are not selling anything on those low valuations? A couple questions in this. The first thing to understand is if you know the market's going down, you can make a lot of money selling gold that you don't own. It's called going short. And there are literally thousands of different ways of doing this and many different vehicles. So I'm going to just grossly oversimplify. But if I know the price is going down and I sell it short, that is, I sell it when I don't own it, then after the price goes down, I can buy it in to go ahead and deliver it at the lower price. So in fact, you can make fantastic amounts of money going short. There's also plenty of vehicles now. If you go into Yahoo Finance, you can find many ETFs, exchange-traded funds, that are reverse vehicles. So you can bet against, you can bet on something falling, and the value of your ETF goes up as the value of the thing you're betting against goes down. So yes, you can make money. Now, the other thing is, if you look at the powers that be that are trying to bring in tremendous amounts of inventory at a lower price, if you've got lots of shortages to cover, gold's trading at $1,700 and you have lots of shortages and need to buy in, you wham the price down, you bring everything in at $1,380, $1,400. You're much better off than trying to cover your shorts at $1,700, and you don't really care that the price of your other gold is valued at is gone down to $1,400 because, you know, there's no reason to care. Now, if you had to mark to market on some collateral or something, you might care. But if you look at the people who view gold as the primary source of payment mechanisms in the global currency system, you know, they tend not to think of this in terms of nominal prices. Okay, another question. What's really happening? Are they taking over the industrial and financial world, or are they imploding? It's neither. You need a balanced view. China is a real juggernaut in terms of people and talent. They have tremendous problems. One is, how do you keep that many people employed? Two, there are real environmental issues, and they're short of water. So this is a country that has many, many challenges, but they also have remarkable people, remarkable resources. So I think China is not going to go away. But there's no doubt you've seen tremendous misallocation of capital in China, as you have seen around the world. And of course, China is deeply dependent on America and the developed world continuing to consume. And if we're going to dramatically reduce consumption in the developed world, then China's going to have a real problem. But China could be in for a major correction, but China's here to stay, and the long-term growth outlook on China is very strong. Finally, Thrive is an amazing movie. Thank you so much for risking what you did in order to bring the message to more people. You're very welcome. Then, Catherine, I want to share with you two links to give you some perspective on the film Thrive. You may or may not know that progressive people interviewed by the Gambles have signed a letter disavowing their participation in the film. They have publicly disassociated themselves from it. Here is the link for their letter written by John Robbins. Also is a link to the Huffington Post article called Thrive Deconstructing the Film that subsequently inspired the publication of a book, blah, blah, blah. I watched the entire film, and by the end of it was so alarmed that I searched the net to find any critiques of it. So many of the people who were interviewed I respect and to whom I listen. The two links above are enough. It's very funny. As Foster and Kimberly were working on Thrive, and I give them great credit because they sat down and they said, okay, here's a blank piece of paper. Let's take responsibility to define what the problem is and what the solutions are. One of the great things about Thrive was that they had the courage to say, Virginia, there is a conspiracy. There is an effort globally to centralize control, and it is not in our best interest to allow it to happen, and we need to understand what we're up against. And as Kimberly has often said, you know, that's a pretty gruesome thing to face. Once you face it, you get a breakthrough because you start to see real solutions. If you look at a lot of the people that were interviewed in Thrive, a number of them were people that I had tried to warn Kimberly and Foster were not trustworthy in this respect. After the movie came out, they disassociated, which was unusual because they had had an opportunity to see the movie before it came out to make comments. Some of them saw it and said nothing and only waited until after it came out. Now, I talked with some of them and was approached by some of them, and here's what was going on. First of all, a lot of those people have their identity, their livelihood, as sort of what I call the modified hangout group. Their job is to come out and say, oh, these things are terrible, but the system is fundamentally trustworthy and we can trust, you know, in it. And so they will never take that last step and say, you know, there is a global centralization scheme, and it's as seriously horrible as, you know, what Foster and Kimberly are saying. So they're part of the modified hangout team, and it's their job to make sure nobody comes out and tells you the real truth. The other thing is, I had some people who had signed the letter that Robinson wrote, and they were afraid. I talked to them, and they had clearly had the fear of God in them. They were afraid they would be targeted. They were afraid they'd be shunned. They were terribly afraid of what would happen to them if they didn't go along. I have some theories as to who was behind the scenes organizing. I was approached by somebody who was, I believe, was working for them. And it's somebody I've had a similar kind of experience with before. They're not very nice. And they very much are paid and work for the pro-centralization team, despite having a reputation as a wonderful, progressive, leading for real solutions, blah, blah, blah. So the reality is the world is not what it seems. Now, I say this, and you and I are never going to believe or agree with everything that somebody puts in a 2-hour documentary. It's just not possible. So if you sat down with a blank piece of paper and came up with your definition of problem solutions, I dare say each one of us would be different. And not just from Foster and Kimberly, but from each other. And that's why our philosophy on the Salieri Report is we are each responsible to come up with our own maps. And watching Foster and Kimberly go through the challenge of coming up with theirs, I think it's been a remarkable contribution and remarkable to help the rest of us sit down and try and do the same. And it's that collaboration and that coming clean which is so powerful. Now, when we pre-recorded the interview this week, it was just yesterday, we lost a little snippet from the front, and so I'm just going to brief you on that before we start. I had asked Foster and Kimberly to give us an update on how the movie has done. It came out on November 11th, 2011, and since then it came out in 10 languages. It's now been translated into another 14 languages. It's out, you can see it on their website, in 24 languages, and as far as I know, in this genre, it makes it the global phenomenon, which to me is very, very exciting because I know after many, many years of working on this, it was a real labor of love for both of them. It is now getting that they've made it available for free. It's now getting 1 million views a month, and it's inspired a conversation that Foster, I know, is in, loves to do it. He's been traveling around the world leading all sorts of conversations about what is really going on and what can we do about it, what's our vision. So I think the response has been very powerful, but I think it's going to continue steadily. 1 million views a month is a tremendous amount, and that doesn't include a lot of the copies that they can't count. And so I think as we're watching 1 million a month, we're really watching something that's building to a critical mass of people who are breaking through and saying, oh, you know, we can't really trust the leadership. We're on our own. Great, it is what it is. Let's get by the modified hangouts. Let's recognize what's really going on. And with that, let's start to move to real solutions. So with that, let's play our interview. Okay. It's my pleasure now to introduce Foster and Kimberly Gamble, who need absolutely no introduction on the Solari Report. Foster has joined us before, and you've seen both Foster and Kimberly on the block many times. They are the writers, producers, directors, inventors of the Thrive documentary. We've covered the Thrive documentary in Let's Go to the Movies before. We have it back up on the blog again for this Solari Report. If you haven't seen it, it's one of those documentaries that's an absolute must-see. And I wanted Kimberly and Foster to come on today because they have a toolkit on their website, which is a great resource, and I encourage you to check it out at thrivemovement.com called the Solutions Hub. And in addition to getting an update on how the documentary is doing, I wanted to really dive in and have Foster and Kimberly explain the Solutions Hub, give you an example of how it's been used to great success, and then talk about how we all might use it in our lives and communities. I think it's a toolkit and a process that can make an enormous difference in this world. And so it's my pleasure to welcome Foster and Kimberly. Let's jump into the Solutions Hub. Tell us how you came to develop the Solutions Hub. How did it come to be?
Well, everywhere we went, we saw people who were working on lots of different issues. A good example is the GMO labeling or banning. Every city we went to, there were people, you know, at a table or flyers or something that work on GMO, and I started meeting with some of these people and realized that they didn't know each other. And they were all trying to raise the money. They were all trying to make the flyers, all trying to do the petition. They were all doing the same work, recreating the wheel. So we and then people started creating spontaneously Thrive-inspired groups all over the world. So we met as a team and thought, how can we best empower these people? And we thought the best way that we can do it is give them a technological tool by which they can find each other, by which they can self-identify what they're most passionate about, and then where they can share best practices, whether it's petitions or lawsuits or artwork or whatever, so that someone getting interested or joining a group can immediately come up to speed with the work that the most advanced people and groups are doing all over the world. So we launched that, I guess it was about 9 months ago. And I looked on the website today. There are 737 groups from probably about 90 countries from around the world now. So it's just really heartening to see people self-creating, because that was our goal all along, was not to try to centralize control over some global group, but to actually just give people the tools and information to empower them to self-create their own movements and connect with each other.
I should just say that we have the the PDF of the toolkit up at the blog and links to that section of your website up at the Soleri blog. So if for any reason you have any trouble finding it at Thrive Movement, you can just link from the Soleri blog.
Right.
Yeah.
One of the things I've heard both of you say is that the advantage of kind of facing how, you know, facing what's going on in this world and the centralization of political and economic power is realizing the importance of acting sort of ecosystem-wide.
Yeah.
And one of the things I love about the Solution Hub is it gives lots of different kinds of people the ability to envision collaborating in that ecosystem-wide way. In other words, we're competing with somebody who's collaborating ecosystem-wide, so we need to, but we need a methodology to do that.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that's been most exciting about the Solutions Hub is that, you know, like you say, this agenda for the consolidation of wealth and power is extremely well organized and collaborative and well cohered. And yet the solutions, I mean, there are so many, you know, intelligent, resilient, capable people who are committed to various solutions. But because they haven't been organized with each other or having ways to communicate or take advantage of the lessons learned, both what hasn't worked as well as, you know, lawsuits won and data accumulated that can really facilitate solutions. So with the Solutions Hub, it's a whole systems way of going about problem solving. And so on one level, it takes advantage of an international movement because there's information and experience from one country to another that can be helpful to share. But also, just like Foster said, all these people working on, you know, issues but not being collaborative just sets us back. So with the toolkit, you can identify, I guess the main thing about it that I love is that it's not just whole systems in that every sector, as we describe in the movie, you know, each different sector is represented. It means that people can find what's their own unique role in problem solving. And it was also inspired because we had an experience in Northern California in 2007 when there was this aerial spray that started. It was the U.S. Department of Agriculture and Homeland Security, and they had this billion-dollar program that was supposed to run for 10 years doing an aerial spray over 7 million people in urban areas of Northern California. And what happened was, you know, we saw that there were a lot of people out there who didn't feel good about it, but it was pretty disorganized. And so we invited everybody who we had heard of who was speaking out in any way. We just invited them over, and we were working on Thrive at the time, and we had this wheel because it was how we were organizing for the movie, you know, a whole systems approach by exploring the different sectors and how this consolidation was playing out. So what we noticed is we had this room full of people, and they were all concerned about this spray, but in fact they were each motivated slightly differently. And, you know, one might have actually did, you know, really want to find out what kind of lawsuits could be filed to stop it. And someone else really wanted to gather the data on what was actually in the spray in science. And someone else was more interested in media and getting the press coverage. And others, like Foster and I, we wanted to follow the money and find out economically who was funding it. And someone else was more interested in the education and making sure the other communities where it was headed were educated and informed. And someone else was interested in the health impacts, and someone else in the impact on the bees and the soil. And anyway, the point was we had this room where every sector of human endeavor, which I know you have there as part of the toolkit on the blog for people to see, in fact, people identified with one sector more than another when they really sat for a moment and said, what's the part of this that I'm most energized by to be engaged with? And so what happened was we could organize and say, you know, look, you do the part that you're most impassioned about, and I'll do the part that I'm most passionate about, and then we set up this sort of whole systems way that we describe in the toolkit of communicating so that people could go off and actually do the part that they were most motivated to do and come back and realize that someone else was handling another part. And so we were able to make tremendous progress by doing it that way. And also, people weren't burning out and feeling overwhelmed, which is, you know, so often what happens with activism when you just, you think you got to take on the whole issue and stop everything else in your life. And, you know, we can see the result is a lot of people really have come to get burned out or feel like, oh, it's not really worth it. But in fact, what happened with the moth spray is that in 6 months, and I think it was $40,000, the group that had organized actually effectively stopped this spray. And
which I'm sure stunned the people behind this campaign.
It did. And in fact, one of the emails that we saw, there were a lot of Freedom of Information Act things that were revealed, and there was an email that we saw, communication between the California Department of Food and Agriculture and Homeland Security, I think it was. Anyway, they had an email exchange, and it said, we had anticipated some resistance from Santa Cruz, but we didn't expect it to be so well organized. And that was a clue right there. You know, it's like it was actually the organization and the and our being able to provide a communication system and a structure where people could actually do the part that they wanted to do, knowing that the rest was being handled, and then to empower each other with the information and work that was achieved. So, you know, in addition, it's refined down to even levels of engagement, so that this is really kind of a personalized engagement strategy to say, look, you know, I've never met a person who doesn't want a better world. It's just a matter of what's your unique place and purpose in that, and how do you do it without giving up, you know, joy and fun in your life. And so the further breakdown of it is that there are these levels of engagement, because we found that people tend at any one time in their lives to be relating, you know, more inclined to do sort of immediate needs, like I want to go get the soil samples and see what's the result of the spray on the soil or something like that. Someone else was more inclined toward the systemic, like I want to see who's funding it and stop the funding for it. And then there are those who are more naturally inclined toward focusing on the consciousness shift that sort of holds the whole system in its grip. And so whether it's on the consciousness shift at a systemic level or at immediate needs, there's a place for you, and there's no one place that's better than another. And I think that really helped to bring out a lot of people who otherwise wouldn't have known where to begin.
Right, and it what it means is that everybody recognizes everybody else's role is legitimate.
Exactly.
And an understanding you need all these different roles. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, I always use your success with the Brown Moth Spray campaign as one of the great successes. You know, I like to talk about what has worked.
Yeah.
And I think the, you know, my personal experience with the folks who are centralizing power is they're really remarkably good at organization. And I think that we need to also be good at organization. And I see this as a really great offering to help folks, you know, do that. Now, I wanted to bring up something. I was in California in February, and I saw you and Foster in a room of, I don't know, it was about 100 people. Is that right? About 7,500 people. And you presented the Solutions Hub and gave the example of how you had used it to deal with the Brown Moth Spraying campaign. And I saw 75 sort of tired people, sort of worn out from things not working, suddenly get all galvanized and jazzed and realizing, oh, you know, if we could just do this in a way that was collaborative, it could really work.
Yeah.
And it was a remarkable transformation to see that change as they listened. And also because in the audience you had many different generations and you had many different skills and backgrounds and experience. And suddenly they saw a way of working together that could really, you know, put things over the top. Now, is that what you're seeing as you go around?
Let me add another quick chapter to that story, because after Los Angeles, I went to Denver for a conference there. And the Denver Thrive Group is a very, very active one. And they had decided, they've been meeting with, as sectors, but they decided to pool their efforts, particularly for the GMO issue and for free energy. And so when I got there for the for this conference, and it was basically a consciousness type of conference, but they had blended it for the first time ever, as far as I know, with free energy. So it was a consciousness and free energy conference. And they really pulled it off. They had a whole bunch of inventors there. They had panels. They had, you know, spontaneous conversations, what they called fireside chats, where people would just gather and talk about these issues. And so I could really see that group was integrating the whole awareness of the breakthrough technologies that are being suppressed with the consciousness movement in a really beautiful way. So I was talking with some of the people from the movement there, and they were saying, oh, we're sorry that the conference isn't more together. And I was very together. I was amazed. And they said, we spent all day yesterday. These are the organizers of this 2,000-person conference. We spent all day yesterday down at the courthouse working on the GMO issue. So to just visit these cities and realize what people are doing on their own because they're getting some organizing principles is really exciting.
I thought of you, Foster. I was laughing the other night. I bumped into something on the internet where someone was saying it was a financial forum, and they were trying to kick this woman out of the forum because she kept bringing up GMO food. And they said, this is a financial forum. You shouldn't be bringing up GMO food. And the woman was saying, no, wait a minute. They are integrally one thing. You have to go listen to these. And she gave links to some interviews I'd done as to why the, you know, GMO is at the heart of inventing the new currency. And and they were just saying, you know, this makes no sense. We're not going to listen to these links. We're kicking you out of the forum.
Well, you know, the old divide and conquer strategy has been used against us aggressively for a long time. And I've actually seen charts from within the globalist, you know, the powers that would be, some of their planning charts, where they've actually drawn things somewhat similar to our 12-sector wheel. And then I've seen, you know, Excel spreadsheets with all the projects that they've got to take each one of these sectors and dominate it. And Kimberly and I were talking, you know, leading up to this conversation with you, and I thought of the image of a glove. If you take a glove, let's say it's a right-handed glove, and you turn it inside out, it becomes a left-handed glove. And what we realize that we're doing and that you're doing is really turning conspiracy inside out. And when you do that, it uses a lot of the same principles, but it reverses the orientation. So instead of domination, you have liberation. Instead of having it covert, you have transparency. Instead of having it exclusive, you have inclusive. So the whole thing becomes about wholeness instead of violation.
Right. One thing, just because I can't ever hear it enough, one of my favorite parts in Thrive is when you talk about the importance of the principle of nonviolation. Maybe you could, for those who haven't had a chance to see the documentary yet, maybe you could just introduce that concept and how you came to it over the many years of sort of developing the material and doing Thrive.
Sure. Well, thanks for the question. It's probably my favorite thing to talk about, and also the most challenging to talk about, because at the same time it's so obvious and yet so hidden from us. Because the one thing that we have found that everybody agrees to when we talk to them is that they don't want to be violated by other people against their will. Now, unfortunately, I have run across a few people who've admitted to me that they think they should have the right to violate other people because they're smarter, they're more enlightened, they're richer, they're whiter, you know, they're in the majority, whatever their excuse is. But in the creation of Thrive, we were really looking for key navigating insights, the real gems from people like yourself and other people that we interviewed for the film who spent lifetimes coming up with what are the key insights around which we can build a sustainable civilization. And the core one out of all of them that we came to is this principle of nonviolation. You don't get to hurt me and take my stuff. I don't get to hurt you and take your stuff. So you can use force to defend yourself, to defend your rights, to defend your property, but there's complete rules against the initiation of force. And so though everybody agrees to it, as soon as you turn around and say, well, wait a minute, aren't all governments based on taking people's money, whether they like it or not, and then basically going and spending it on whatever they want to spend it on, whether it's wars or bailouts or subsidies for GMOs or whatever else. And then immediately people go, oh, yeah, but that we need. And you're off to the races with all sorts of excuses for violating.
Right.
So if we step way right. back and think, is the initiation of violence actually a sound principle on which to base a sustainable civilization, it becomes kind of ironic and obvious. But really, it's a tragic thing. So to tie this in with the solutions hub, as our team spent years writing all the articles for the website, going into every single sector and all the major critical issues in each sector and analyzing both the problems and the solutions, you know, it's really depressing for a while looking at all those problems. And then we began to realize all of these problems are human-made. This is not a meteor heading toward planet Earth that could explode the whole thing. This is all things that have been done mostly by a very few people through deception and,
right.
and the initiation of violence to control other people's lives. So as all that's getting exposed and as we're catching on to this principle of non-violation, which is also the honoring of wholeness, which is what you do in non-violent martial art of Aikido. It's what you do in accessing free energy. Instead of crushing stuff and burning stuff, exploding stuff, instead you dance with the wholeness of the toroidal pattern of energy, and the universe gives you clean, abundant, boundless energy. And it's the same thing when we get back to justice and to human rights. The application of the torus of wholeness at the human level is the individual. It's the sanctity and sovereignty and sacredness of every single individual, and that's what we call the liberty perspective. And it turns out that all of the different solutions, when you take them back to their source, after you followed the money and realize where it's off from wholeness, it always comes back to honoring the wholeness of the individual, of the economy, of the ecosystem, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. Everybody on the Solari Report has heard me say that that the current financial wealth is 1% of what it could be if you did a series of things, including, you know, I mean, essentially it's removing the force, a lot of the financial force of government. And so the beauty of what you're talking about is as you progressively align those interests, you can create far more economic wealth than we currently have, including all those things we need to heal and preserve the environment.
Absolutely.
So there's no, yeah. So Kimberly, I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No, I appreciate that. One of the additions to that that goes along with being principle-based rather than political is that it really frees up the autonomy and the diversity of the collaboration that's possible, because if people simply abide by that, then you've unleashed all of the creative, resilient, intelligent solutions that people have and will come up with, and you don't have to try to control them or manage them the way you do if it's a particular agenda that has to be followed
right.
By a political orientation. And that's been one of the things that's been so fun in all these gatherings and in our movement, which is that it's just transcends the political divide and mirage and gets us into these principles which lead
Hello?
People back to themselves anyway, which is, you know, what's your core morality and your values, and to be motivated from that is just, you know, makes it so much more fun and so much more autonomous and so much more possible.
Now, when you come into your website, one of the things you talk about is critical mass actions, so that you have the top, you know, sort of priority suggestions of things that people can do. And some of them all of them are things that we can certainly do individually in our home and in our family. But then you suggest we go to critical mass action. And maybe if you could describe what that is and some of the new tools that have been created to engage in critical mass action.
Yeah, the notion of critical mass action is kind of safety in numbers and effectiveness in numbers. And the way we set it up is to say, you know, if there's going to be an action taken, you can be sure that if there's a large, let's say you want to do a GMO, you know, a stand for GMOs on something. If you have 100,000 people or 500,000 people or whatever the number is that you believe will put you on the mark that says this is going to really be effective, I would do this if I could be sure that there were going to be 100,000 other people doing it with me. But I don't want to do it if it's going to be 70 people or 7 people or whatever. So you can sign up and say, here's the, you know, each critical mass action has a number that, you know, whoever puts it up says, yeah, I think when we have this many, this will be sufficient to being effective. And then the people who sign up say, okay, let me know when you've reached that number, and then we can kick in to having an organized and effective action. And I think that that's a big part. You know, like Foster said, our goal is to empower self-creating movements. And so these tools on the website are just, you know, now there's a tool for creating a critical mass of people to do something in your area or in your on your issue. It can be a global mass action. It could be a regional one. It could be at any scale that anybody wants to set up, so long as it has abiding by the principle of not violating anyone in the process of creating a solution. So that's how
I love when I'm with you guys, watching people come from out of the spell of the divide and conquer.
Yeah.
It's literally almost like the trance suddenly is lifted.
Yeah.
And so before we close, if I could just invite you in all your travels, if any more stories of the divide and conquer stuff coming unhinged as you're working with audiences.
Well, for me, when I look around to see are people being successful, and I look at what people did in Iceland to actually expose and then prosecute the Rothschild banking system that was taking that country apart, and then in this country when people stood up against the mandatory flu vaccine, and they stopped the national ID card, and all they so far people have stopped the many attempts to take over the internet, many bills in Congress, the PIPA, SOPA, CISPA, all of these attempts to take it over. Just everywhere that I am looking, I'm seeing people are starting to be successful. And that builds confidence.
Right.
And at the same time, we need to recognize that all of the money that is behind the centralizing powers has hundreds of these issues, these contractions in mind, and intend to keep them flowing at us, so that if we stop a few, the other ones are going to get by. But here in Santa Cruz, the when they tried to do the mandatory installation of these radiating so-called smart meters, they call them Gestapo meters around here. When they tried to do that here, we already had the email networks created by the groups that stopped the moss spray. So, and we had all agreed at the end of that successful action that we needed to keep our list, we needed to keep our connections, because there will be a lot more coming down the road. So sure enough, when they tried to install those, the group got active again, and Santa Cruz was the first county in the country to stop that mandatory installation and actually ban that. So that's just one example where, you know, we see the Thrive Group in Taos has been doing fantastic things with emergency preparedness and alternative currencies. And you know, I could go on and on, but that's the kind of information that people can get by going to our Solutions Hub. When you go to ThriveMovement.com, go to the at the top navigating bar, it says Get Involved. And you pull down that list and go to Engage in Solutions. And that'll take you to the page where you can get access to all of our different documents, but also you can find other groups by locations or by sectors or by issues. You can see success stories that people are sending in from different Thrive groups around the world, and then also people are already posting lots of different resources for effective action.
Yeah,
one of the things I'm going to do with this interview. Kimberly, did you want to add something? One of the things I'm going to do is I'm going to take a copy of this interview and give it to some people, because I was in Ohio this summer, and I mentioned that because that's where Foster grew up, and there's a terrible housing problem with abandoned houses. The state and local officials now have, I think, 50,000 homes that need to be torn down. And then you have a significant continuing foreclosure problem and then a great deal of people who are underwater. And what I wanted to do is, you know, so you literally have a significant amount of reengineering of land use that's got to happen. And really, you need to find a way to deal with predatory lending and to hold the predatory lenders accountable to help with the situation. And there's a great congresswoman in Ohio who I met with last summer when I was in Port Clinton, Marcy Kaptur, who was an urban planner by training and is extremely knowledgeable about both the state and local economy. And I've always wanted to get the Solutions Hub into some kind of community process, and Ohio would be a perfect place, or, you know, it could be others, but get some of the community groups and community foundations to start leading a conversation about, okay, how are we going to solve this situation, you know, both with respect to not having our financial, you know, having financial institutions that give us energy instead of sort of destroy and harvest the community, and do it in a way where we help turn around the situation.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's my next thing. I'm going to give this interview out to a whole bunch of people. I'm hoping we'll do that.
Well, I think that would be fabulous. And I was thinking about the problem in Ohio, actually. I really appreciate Marcy Kaptur and the work that she's been doing. And, you know, I just looked up the CAFRs in Ohio, which is the, you know, the
Comprehensive Annual Financial Report.
Yeah, it's the fund that the local government makes. They can invest money, and so even if they say there's no money to deal with this housing crisis, meanwhile, it looks to me that in 2012 there was $73 billion in actual funds available in Ohio. And I was thinking about, you know, one of the things about being principled and trans-political, where you get past that, is that it doesn't matter, you know, what side of the political spectrum you're on. If there's some money available to deal with these local crises, people should know about them. And there's a blog on this on at ThriveMovement.com, and you can link to it at the bottom of this report also, to have people there get informed about it, but also about, you know, what's the vision for a thriving Ohio and how can you work back from there? Because we were thinking about just the demolition of the buildings there. You know, there's probably enough copper, recycled lumber, all kinds of stuff that people could get into, hire the local community to do the work, and what is the vision for the new housing and a community garden, and all that kind of stuff could be done using a Solutions Hub to organize, you know, by your passion in your region.
Yeah, we'll have the permaculturalists invade Ohio.
Exactly.
Absolutely. I'm sure there are a bunch there already, you know, who just don't.
Oh, I'm sure there are. I'm sure there are.
That's what's needed. Whatever you're doing, it's what's needed. It's a matter of fitting it together with everything else. So I'll love to see Ohio and any other area be empowered by the tools. And, you know, we're looking to improve our Solutions Hub to make it ever more user-friendly and effective, and so as people join, know that we're going to be actually looking to create a webinar where we interact live with people to help them learn how to use it and how to make it a better tool for everybody. So that's our intention in this coming year.
Okay, so let's just go through again how, just walk us through how we go to thrivemovement.com and sign up for the updates and get to be part of what you're doing.
If you go to www.thrivemovement.com, that'll take you to our homepage, and if you haven't seen the movie, you can see it for free there. Then you can explore what's the vision, what are the critical issues, and what are potential solution strategies for all 12 different sectors. So you can spend as much time as you need to in getting enough information about any particular area to feel sufficiently motivated to do something about it. Then when you get to that point, a lot of the website is dedicated toward empowering you in that way. So go to the section called Get Involved, and you can see our top 10 recommended actions that you can take individually, the whole solutions hub, critical mass actions, and also how to make sure that you keep yourself supported as an individual, emotionally, in terms of communications with people, your health, your well-being, and so forth, while you're taking actions. And then also you can find how to connect with other people who are taking action, and you can also sign up for our Thrive updates. You can join us on Facebook, Twitter, and you can follow my blog just by signing up on the site.
And one last
thing. Right, one of the things I love is your suggestion to stay in balance.
In balance. And one other thing is that it really provides kind of a buddy system. You know, like you can enter your zip code and find who's working on a Thrive-inspired issue in your zip code area. And so when you want to make these changes, you know, you can team up with someone else who's going to be doing it at the same time, whether it's, you know, changing your banks and, you know, bringing this accountability to the predatory lenders and all of that. You can do those things, you know, partnering with others in your area. And I think that just makes it so much more fun and so much more effective. And we love
what
you're doing.
People always want to meet other people in their area.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who are interested in this. Yeah.
And we love what you're doing with the Solari Report. It's just fantastic. We rely on you and your good sleuthing as one of our sources of news, and recommend you, and just appreciate so much your good humor and perseverance and courage and intelligence in going after all this and in your empowering vision of a thriving world. We love it.
If we get tired or we get discouraged at some point or something like that, we'll talk with each other. We'll think back to the story of you when you were getting hassled and your securities company was getting raided and so forth, and the fact that you went through that for 10 years under real stress and financial duress and all that kind of thing, and not only kept a sense of humor but came out the other end being this motivated and clear and helpful to people. You know, we just stop and think, oh, man, we got nothing compared to what she went through. So if she can do that, we can keep going.
Well, it's funny you say that, because I get the same thing from you guys. I remember, you know, all during while you were making Thrive, I was just so grateful that this was being done and was going to come out. Because, you know, it's once you're clear that there's a pro-centralization plan, and they're really that clear about it, and you can fathom that, then it's really easy to understand what we have to do. And, that, you know, since people have gotten that, I think there's been a tremendous breakthrough in the effectiveness of action. But I remember just, and when the brown moth spraying started, I thought, oh, no, it's going to delay Thrive, but thank God you did that. And then Thrive came out, and then I saw the divide and conquer come back at you.
Yeah.
And I was so worried that I would make sure that I had communicated to you everything I knew about what you might be up against and how to be effective in it. And I remember seeing that huge stuff that you were dealing with, and I thought, oh, Foster and Kimberly, welcome to my world.
Catherine,
I said to Kimberly,
go ahead.
Foster, you dealt with it so much better than I did. And I said to Kimberly, you know, how did you do it? And she said, you know, we love each other and we have each other. Yeah, it was so very inspiring.
It really helped because when one of us would get down, the other would be in a good space about it. So we have really helped each other with it, and it makes a huge difference. And you have been a model for us. And, you know, the other thing is just that I think I have this Audre Lorde quote. You know, it says, when I use my strength in service of my vision, it matters less and less whether or not I'm afraid. And I think about that a lot. I mean, what, you know, one thing we've always been able to do, Foster and I, in doing this is to sleep well, knowing that we're on purpose and we're doing what we believe in, and with a true heart and true intent. And so that's just the nature of the beast. You know, if you're going to be changing, you know, working to change this status quo, you're going to get some resistance. And so I think we're about to do a blog actually on how to talk about this information with your friends and keep them as your friends. because that's what really comes up, you know. It's like, wow, we have been so steeped in this divide and conquer that just to find the people who agree to disagree with is hard to do, you know.
Everywhere we've gone, we realize that everyone in the audience is dealing with that issue of how to talk about these challenging topics without it, you know, challenging your social status or challenging your friendship or your credibility or whatever. And I'm sure, Catherine, you probably saw that new article by Matt Taibbi in Rolling Stone about the latest, you know, big con that's getting exposed with the ISDA fix.
He
starts it out with this sentence. He says, conspiracy theorists of the world, believers in the hidden hands of the Rothschilds and the Masons and the Illuminati, we skeptics owe you an apology. You are right.
It reminds me in the one time in the board meeting in the Financial Permaculture Conference, I turned to one of the young, very liberal permaculturists, and I said, you know, sometimes what you have to understand is the right-wing wackos are right. Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, it's been a delight to have you on the Soleri Report. You know, we're for you. We're going to have links up to the blog posts and other parts of the website that you've mentioned. They'll be on the Soleri. But again, if you have not seen Thrive, it's one of those, you know, it's a must-watch documentary, and you can link. You can go to thrivemovement.com and see it for free. It's a wonderful, if you haven't seen it, it's a wonderful documentary to organize a viewing by, you know, the whole family or all your friends. It's one of those things a lot of people enjoy watching it, stopping, discussing, watching, stopping, discussing. But it's going to, you're going to find it a fascinating experience, and you will leave the experience feeling much more optimistic about what's possible. So, Foster and Kimberly, thank you again for joining us on the Soleri Report. You have a wonderful, wonderful day.
Yeah, you too. Thanks so much, Catherine.
Thank you, Catherine. Bye to you
Thanks.
And all your network.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, so we have some great questions. Let me just go through them quickly. Understanding the idea of a conspiracy is like going through the five stages of grief, starting with denial and anger. Yes. I agree. Regarding Adam Trombley's electricity generator, what has happened since having the equipment and files seized? Were the designs details lost? Can the machine be reproduced? That's in reference to Adam Trombley, who was interviewed in Thrive, and it was one of the inventors of a free electricity generator. Without going into the details of Adam and what he has and what he's doing, what I will say is that there are more than a few inventors known to Foster and a wide variety of people I know and trust that that have invented technology like this. Clearly, the technology is possible and feasible. If you've ever watched the films of the UFOs going up and down, clearly somebody has something like this. So I'm convinced that the technology is possible. Now, whether or not it's politically feasible for it to be adapted and what the issues are of adaptation, that's a whole nother conversation. If it's one you're interested in, the Breakthrough Energy Movement Conference has now made all of their videos accessible. I put up a blog post about it, so you can access it. Just do Breakthrough Energy on the Soleri blog, and you'll pull up those links. You can go watch to your heart's content. And as I said, they're hoping to put together a conference in Boulder in October, and there's going to be more of the same. But I'm convinced the technology could make an enormous difference. And in fact, if you look at the bifurcation of the trading of commodities and equities, you know, if such technology was to get integrated, that could be something that could definitely send that stock to gold, or the S&P 500 to gold ratio headed for the moon. Question from someone on gold. According to Yamada report, gold may drop further and take many years to recover. Your thoughts? We've seen in the last week a lot of the cases being made that the gold bull market is over. We had Bloomberg come out with an article today. It's posted up or will be posted up on the blog. Larry Edelson came out with a report saying the Dow gold ratio is going up. The gold bull is over. A more measured report from somebody I respect, Luis Yamada, it'll be up on the blog tomorrow, who, in fact, points out that if you look at breaking through the technical lines of 1530, and we talked about this on the Precious Metals Market Report, we'll talk about it again next week with Franklin, if you break through the 1530 line, a technician would argue that you could drop as low as 1200 to 1100 before you have a strong support line. Yamada is simply pointing out that we could remain in the bull and still drop much further before it recovers. One thing that you are noting is tremendous retail buying of physical around the world, which argues for building a much stronger base for a much longer-term bull. Could it take many years to recover? Yes, absolutely. And the Yamada report is a measured one, and worth reading if you're a gold investor to understand some of the possible scenarios. You mentioned in several previous reports the importance of being coherent. Can you expand on this? I suspect this goes beyond the dictionary definition. Great question. If you haven't listened to our interview with William Tiller, that's where I talk about it, the importance of being coherent, and I would recommend that. If that doesn't do it for you, just send back the question and I'll talk about it some more. I'm working on a book called Coming Clean, and that's one of the things I'm absolutely going to address in Coming Clean, so keep an eye out for that. Jim Gillespie from San Diego. To your knowledge, is there any free energy that's currently being engineered, repackaged, and then covertly sold to us to utilize in our homes and businesses? I don't know. I have no knowledge of such a thing being happening. Now, obviously, if the technology exists, could this be done in theory? Yes. There's nothing in the economics of what's going on to suggest that it's happening. There seems to be a very strict line between technology and application. Hello, we are longtime subscribers to a Soleri and turned on to Thrive and Foster Gamble by Catherine. Since viewing Thrive, we knew we had to do something. While you can't fix everything, as Foster and Kimberly have said, one of us is concentrated on nullifying the NDAA. While I have become an anti-nuclear activist, I would like to hear both Catherine and Foster's impressions on the International Nuclear Fusion Project known as ITER. The moment that I read toroidal magnetic fields, I thought of Foster and Thrive. The moment I read International Consortium, the conspiracy of global domination and control, the energy crept into my mind. I will try to include links below. I'm also surprised that I've never heard of the project before now. So I've sent this question for Foster and see if we can't get an answer back. Okay, that's it. Thank you for your good questions coming in on the webinar software. Okay, in closing next week, a lot to talk about. Precious Metals Market Report, and then two wonderful ones that we have spent I just can't tell you how much time we spent researching these. Two Coming Cleans. My Water is Wonderful, with Dan Hillard, who is from LifeSource, a wonderful company in Pasadena, which is expert in household water systems, a filter for your whole house or different kinds of filters within your home. And for years now, we've gotten questions about how do I make sure my water is wonderful. And so Dan will be coming on. And then the following week, a wonderful professor from Norway one of the leading authors and historians on the geopolitics of water. So we're going to, on the 16th, we're going to look at water from a micro perspective, and then on the 23rd, from a macro perspective, you know, what has been the global geopolitical role of water throughout history, and what is it now? And then, of course, May 30th, John Rappaport, who will be doing his own thing this week. I've joined him for the last two months, but this time John will be on his own. So until May 9th with Franklin Sanders, I'll be out here in Silicon Valley in the San Francisco Bay Area, and Franklin will be back in Tennessee. Until then, please don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one, and hopefully the Solutions Hub will help make sure yours is both fun and effective, and you can implement it while staying in balance. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.